It is Friday, January the 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Coming up, Indonesians place reef in aftermath of Islamic State attack, which reads,
"We are not afraid." And that is an attitude that a lot of people are trying to project, but in speaking with them, there is obviously some fear.
Also ahead, the latest on the migrants trying to reach the European shores, plus the deaths of two notable personalities in the world of entertainment. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Islamic State has claimed responsibility for Thursday's coordinated bomb and gun attack in the Indonesian capital Jakarta that left seven people dead, including all five attackers. Violence began with a series of explosions mid-morning in an area near a shopping center. There were also luxury hotels nearby, embassies, and other office buildings. The militants engaged afterwards in intense gun battles with police throughout the day, and by late afternoon, authorities had declared that the attack was over, saying all five militants were killed. VOA's Steve Herman is in Jakarta and spoke moments ago with me about the uniqueness of this particular assault.
Certainly, this is the most populous Muslim nation in the world, and this is the first time that there has been an attack here, claimed by the so-called Islamic State. There had been warnings that something like this might happen. Authorities here in December had issued an alert and had put extra security on at public places and churches and other venues that they thought might be the targets of an attack. But that was supposed to happen sometime in December or around New Year's. So this really did catch people by surprise here. And I think also what's been very concerning is, according to the authorities here and others, that there are hundreds of Indonesians who have apparently gone to the Middle East and been involved to some degree with this organization, and that there are hundreds, if not thousands of more, who are perhaps sympathetic. And that is a real shock to most people here, because this has been considered for centuries an extremely tolerant society, the vast majority of the people practicing a moderate form of Islam. And as they would tell you, that this sort of thing has nothing to do with the Islam that they believe in.
And hasn't one of those persons been the president, Widodo? Hasn't he made a point since these attacks started happening some time back by Islamic State that he's condemned them and said, this is not us?
Precisely. And he has gone out to the scene of the attack here in central Jakarta, and said very clearly that obviously nothing like this can be tolerated. And all of the authorities here are vowing to do their utmost to fight back against it. And but there is a concern that because of the number of Indonesians who may have IS sympathies, and a struggle for the so-called leadership of the group in Southeast Asia, that there could actually be different cells that are following what different want-to-be leaders are saying, that could try to outdo each other in carrying out attacks. So that is a very big concern right now.
We understand that the U.S. Embassy decided to close today as a precaution. Is there any level of lockdown going on in Jakarta?
No, we haven't seen that. People we've spoken with are obviously being more careful about where they're going and expressing unease about being at shopping malls and other places where there are a lot of people. There is, or was at least last night, right near the site of this attack, a much stronger police presence with special forces of the police out there on the streets within eyesight of the of where the blast occurred, carrying automatic weapons. And armored personnel carriers were out on the streets on Thursday in the hours after the attack. And it's Friday here. Of course, a lot of people going off to the mosques for prayers, and we'll have to see what the presence and what the mood is like here. But there's also a bit of defiance. There was a wreath that has been placed at the site of the police traffic box where there were casualties, and that reads, "We are not afraid." And that is an attitude that a lot of people are trying to project, but in speaking with them, there is obviously some fear.
That is VOA Steve Herman in Jakarta. Still ahead, Islamic State fighters killed in retaliation for Istanbul's suicide attack.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Turkey's president says military operations will intensify against the Kurdish rebel group, the PKK, after it was blamed for a car bombing of a police headquarters. Dorian Jones is in Istanbul with the story.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is promising there'll be no end to military operations against the PKK until it's eradicated. Erdogan spoke in response to the bombing of the police headquarters Wednesday in the Diyarbakir province in Turkey's predominantly Kurdish southeast. The government blamed the attack on the rebels. The region's at the centre of a major security crackdown, which local human rights groups say has led to more than 200 civilian deaths, including children and the elderly. Erdogan also criticised the more than 1,000 academics who, in a petition this week, condemned the crackdown and called for a resumption of a peace process with the PKK. He says a group that calls themselves academics has emerged and spewed hatred against their state and nation by publicly taking sides with the terror organisation. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu announced the army has carried out a sustained bombardment against Islamic State militant targets in Syria and Iraq in response to the suicide attack on foreign tourists Tuesday in Istanbul.
O andan bugüne kadar yaklaşık 48 saat içinde
he said 500 artillery rounds were fired at Daesh positions in the past 48 hours, killing 200 terrorists in total, including so-called regional chiefs. Davutoğlu was using the Arabic name for IS. He also promised retaliation against any threat directed at what he called Turkey's guests. UNGRA has in the past faced criticism from its allies that its security forces are too focused on fighting the PKK rather than jihadists. British Foreign Minister Philip Hammond is visiting Ankara for talks with Turkey's political leadership, including cooperation in fighting IS. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
And you can keep up with the latest news about the Islamic State, plus more at our website, that's voanews.com. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that afflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
This is VOA's International Edition. The International Organization for Migration, also called the IOM, reports that approximately 19,000 migrants have made that treacherous journey across the Mediterranean during the first days of the year. Flavio Di Giacomo is the IOM spokesperson in Italy, and he speaks here now with VOA's Kim Lewis about the plight of the migrants and the refugees who continue to risk their lives trying to reach European shores.
Actually, we have seen the arrival since January 1st of more than 18,000 people in these first 11 days of the month. Well, the majority of migrants arrived in Greece, 18,600, while in Italy we didn't register any arrival until yesterday because of the conditions of the sea, which were very rough. But yesterday, 220 people were rescued at Sine Channel, Sicily, and brought to Lampedusa, while other 37 people arrived off the coast of Apulia. And unfortunately, they were dead and missing migrants, because in that case, boat carrying about 42 migrants, all Somalis, men and women, coming from Greece, well, they arrived close to the coast of Apulia. And once there, the smugglers, they actually forced them to jump into the water and swim, even those who didn't have any life jackets. And those who resisted and didn't want to jump, especially women, were beaten. So they were forced to jump in the water. And unfortunately, many of those migrants, they were not able to swim. While about 37 people made it, others went missing, and the corpse of a dead woman was found. We fear that all the missing and dead are women who couldn't swim.
Why did the smugglers force them to jump into the water?
Probably because they didn't want to reach the shore, so they just wanted to let the migrants go and come back without being arrested by the authorities.
This number of migrants so far reaching the shores of Europe, has it exceeded the number this time last year?
Reportedly, we still have to check out all the statistics, but yes, because the main difference compared to last year is the fact that last year the arrivals in Greece, they started after a few months of 2015, so the first month of the year, we haven't registered many arrivals. We know that the big crisis involving Greece started actually from the spring with the arrival of about 4,000 migrants per day in the Greek islands. So at the time of the year, I remember that there were arrivals in Italy, just in Italy, many arrivals, but not 18,000. Even if I remember very well that last year in the Channel of Sicily, we seen already in February many, many deaths. I remember that there were about 400 deaths in the first days of February in the Channel of Sicily. So the situation is not getting any better. We know that the journeys in this period of the year are very dangerous because of the sea conditions. So even if the journey from Turkey to Greece lasts only about 1 hour, the sea conditions now are very rough, so the migrants are risking their lives. So we are quite worried about that in this period.
Do you all have any new action plans that you are putting in place to help protect the migrants?
Well, in that case, we know that both in Greece and in Italy, the authorities are doing their best to rescue migrants at sea, the Coast Guards, the Navy, the European Union operations like Triton. IOM is both in Greece and Italy to provide assistance to those who arrive at land. And the problem is that all the migrants arriving in Italy and Greece, they arrive from a situation of crisis. We know the situation in Libya now is quite complicated. We really don't know what will happen in the country, and this will affect, of course, the arrival of migrants.
That's Flavio Di Giacomo. He's the spokesperson in Italy for the International Organization for Migration and was speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis. It is time now to check out what's buzzing online with International Edition's G. Abby Lee, who's here to tell us about a conversation between President Obama and Twitter users. Hi, G.
Hi, Steve. It's not every day you get to speak directly with the President of the United States, but it was possible Thursday thanks to Twitter. President Obama was on Twitter around 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to answer questions addressed to him with hashtag AskPOTUS. The first question he answered is this: what are we going to do about making college more affordable? His answer reads like this: expanded Pell Grants, capped loan repayment at 10% income, but now also want to make two-year community college free. What a Pell Grant is money provided by the government for students who need it for tuition. And the awesome thing about it is that they don't have to be paid back.
You know, gee, Pell Grants always seem to be a controversial topic, especially when you move into the political realm, it seems. Any more conversations to tell us about?
Sure, he answered questions about Islamophobia, healthcare, and of course, gun control. Here's one on healthcare. Federal funding was all but denied by former Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal for Medicaid and more. How can we fix that going forward? Mr. Obama answered, new Louisiana Governor Bill Edwards just expanded Medicaid, gets 1,000's coverage, and helps the state budget. More states need to follow. In a separate tweet, he also said the greatest memory while being president was when the Affordable Care Act passed. But Steve, it wasn't all serious policy talks. He even got asked about his favorite basketball players. One Twitter user asked whether he likes Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, or LeBron James. The president answered, love them all.
That was a diplomatic answer. Yeah, he's well known as a huge basketball fan. Before you go, any responses to the Twitter talk?
Paul Ryan was quick to share his thoughts. He tweeted, hashtag AskPOTUS ended without mentioning the economy, poverty, veterans, ISIS, or Iran. Hashtag priorities. So clearly, Speaker Ryan didn't think highly of it. Back to you.
And many thanks to you, G. That is VOA social media guru, G. Abby Lee. You know, you can find G on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman. And you can follow International Edition on Twitter at VOA _IE. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
Robots are replacing humans at this industrial complex in Dongguan, a major industrial base in China's southern Guangdong province. The area's labor shortage has ignited a rise of the machines, the demand for which is growing. Xing Xinhua is the chairman of Dongguan Lianyu Hardware. He says on one hand, replacing human laborers with robots can cut managerial and labor costs. On the other hand, it can improve productivity by 20%. In some cases, upgrading from humans to robots can pay for itself in a short amount of time. Chen Yong Kai is chairman of Dalian Machine Tool Group. He says if a business produces to its full capacity, it'll be able to pay back its investment in the robots with saved labor costs in 1 year. One example might be a factory that manufactures watches, filters, and smartphones, replacing hundreds of human workers. Another advantage, robots can work 24 hours a day. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. The Justin Timberlake and Jay-Z hit Suit and Tie made them millions of dollars and was used by a very popular Bud Light beer commercial. But as International Edition's David Byrd and VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee tell us, there's a group from the 1970s that's suing, claiming that part of that song was their hit, Shownuff, that was used without permission.
Justin Timberlake and Jay-Z's hit song Suit and Tie was a mega success. But now there's a group that's saying, hey, wait a minute, you didn't pay us to use a part of that. Shauna, what are we talking about here? This reminds me a lot of Blurred Lines with the Marvin Gaye family.
Well, in a way it does. So let me explain what happened. In 2013, on his Love Experience album, Justin Timberlake and Jay-Z released Suit and Tie. And so there apparently is a part of this song that had been sampled from a band called Sly, Slick, and Wicked. And they had a song back in 1973 called Shownuff. Now, we do know for a fact that that song was sampled. The question here is whether or not the proper rights or the complete rights were paid to the group. The group is saying that they were not paid for the vocal rights or the vocal performance that appeared in Suit and Tie. And on another part here, the Universal Music Group, who is actually being sued, apparently licensed the song for a very popular beer commercial here in the States. And so Sly, Slick, and Wicked are these two members of the group are saying they were never paid for that. And that's the biggest issue because this was a huge campaign. And I'm sure that Universal Music Group and Bud Light and whoever else was involved in this got paid. And they think, well, it was a song that sampled our song, and therefore we should have a cut of this or enjoy a cut of this as well.
Now, this has been an issue since sampling started, though.
If a song has been used, and this is what makes it different from what went on with Blurred Lines, that was a question of whether or not the song inspired the other and to what degree. Here we know that there was a portion of the song that had been sampled. So if, in fact, that happens, I think as an artist, you are well within your rights to say, listen, if you use my music, you should pay for that. If you use part of my vocal performance, then you should pay for that as well.
What do you think? You can let us know. Send a tweet to Shauna. She is at VOA Lady DJ. You can also send one to at VOA underscore IE. And you can log on to our website. That's voanews.com. Let me show you a few things. Show you a few things about love. Hey.
British actor Alan Rickman, a classically trained stage star and screen villain in the Harry Potter saga plus other films, has died. He was 69. My colleague Susan Yockey spoke with VOA's Penelope Pulu about Rickman.
Of course, we all know him as Severus Snape from Harry Potter. He came back for all 8 films, and he became internationally famous because of that role. What was so important about him was his wit. Incredible, serious face with a very commanding voice. He was quickly established as one of the main characters in the Harry Potter franchise.
And he had a wonderful voice.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the depth of that voice. He started on TV as with Romeo and Juliet in the 70s. And then he went on to play in theater in the Shakespeare Royal Company. He won 2 Tony Awards. In 1998, he started playing on Broadway as Vicomte de Beaumont in Dangerous Liaison. And the show was a small show, but again, it won acclaim because of his uncanny ability to immerse himself into the characters he played. Of course, he became more of a villain in most of the films, actually, that he was cast, like Die Hard.
I was going to mention that one.
Yeah.
A good movie.
Very good film. Very good film. So he had a softer side. He played softer romantic characters. He was very seductive in that not so attractive, you know, persona of his. He was not one of these glamorous actors, but there was something about him that was very captivating.
What about his personal life?
He has been hailed as a wonderful human being. Most of the actors that played opposite him were devastated to find out that he died. Of course, one of the celebrities that tweeted first was J.K. Rowling, the writer of Harry Potter, who actually said exactly that, how devastated she was and how we lost an amazing person. And same with Emma Thompson. She said, I lost my best friend. I just kissed him goodbye. You know, so obviously he left a tremendous legacy, not only as a person, but as a family man and as a human being, as a friend.
And you mentioned his family. He's survived by his wife, I understand?
His wife and children, oh. I believe, yeah. And the battle with cancer was very short. So most of us were surprised by the sudden death. It wasn't like with David Bowie that we knew he had a lengthy battle with cancer. This one came out of the blue, at least for me. I was shocked, and just anecdotally, I went to my daughter the first thing I did this morning, who is an incredible Potter fan, and I mentioned it, and she started crying.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
International Edition, Susan Yockey speaking with our colleague Penelope Pulu.
Renee Angelil, singer Celine Dion's husband, manager also, molded her career from a French-speaking Canadian ingenue into one of the world's most successful singers, died Thursday. He had cancer as well, throat cancer. 73-year-old Angelil died in their suburban Las Vegas home. He lived there with Dion and their three children. He was born in Montreal to a Canadian mother and a Syrian father, and he became the love of Dion's life and the linchpin for her huge success guiding her career most of her life. At a recent appearance in Las Vegas, Dion sung "Because of You, Because You Love Me," that is, in honor of her husband.
For all those times you stood by me, for all the truth that you made me see, for all the joy you brought to my life, for all the wrong that you made right, for every dream you made to come true, for all the love I found in you, I'll be forever thankful, baby. You're the one who held me up, never let me fall. You're the one who saw me through it all. You were my strength when I was weak.
Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Reminder, the top world news is straight ahead. And for our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Jonah Cummings, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a great Friday. Now a bit more of Celine Dion's recent dedication to her husband.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The United States is determined to disrupt the illicit flow of money from the trade of oil and trafficking of antiquities to the terrorist group Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL. Toward this end, the U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to the significant disruption of the sale and or trade of oil and antiquities by, for, on behalf of, or to benefit ISIL. Through its illegal oil operations and trafficking in looted archaeological material from Syria and Iraq, ISIL has generated millions of dollars in hard currency, enabling it to brutalize and oppress innocent civilians. This is the first time the U.S. Secretary of State has authorized a Rewards for Justice offer for information that could be used to disrupt the sale or trade in oil and antiquities by or on behalf of a terrorist organization. Anyone with information on oil and antiquities trafficking that benefits ISIL can contact the Rewards for Justice office via the website at www.rewardsforjustice.net or by email at info@rewardsforjustice.net or by standard mail at Rewards for Justice, Washington, D.C., 20520-0303. USA. Individuals in North America can also call this phone number, 1-800-877-3927. All information will be kept strictly confidential. The Rewards for Justice program is administered by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Diplomatic Security. Since its inception in 1984, the program has paid in excess of $125 million to more than 80 people who provided actionable information that put terrorists behind bars or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. Follow us on Twitter at https://www.rewardsforjustice.net twitter.com/rewardsforjustice, as in the numeral 4.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
It's 4 hours.